Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody yet?
No, we were not riding last Saturday, but we really didn't do that far, didn't do that much. In fact, I really not say which dealership we went to party because it was really a boring ass party. But, you know, I guess any party is better than no party. And the weather's still warm out here. Life is good.
Sun's shining.
Yeah. We're looking at just basically a couple of local runs coming up, and then we have Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And after Las Vegas, we've got Palm Springs.
I'm
sure open anybody that's going to be at Las Vegas or Palm Springs and they wish to contact us here. Maybe we can all hook up something for a drink or something, take over some bar, cause some trouble.
Right.
If our listeners have motorcycles, I hope they have motorcycles.
Right. You know, there's a couple of things, Bill.
Those are one of the things that bug me a lot?
No.
Okay.
No, this is one of the things that you like.
Oh, the ones they work on. Okay, good.
Yeah. This is, this is from the DAV, Disabled American Vets. And this is what we talk about all the time, where the women should get treated just as good as the guys do. But
what's happened is, once again, our government wasn't prepared. Let's talk about Vietnam very quickly. With all the casualties coming home from Vietnam, the hospitals were not prepared for the amount of volume of people coming in here. And I can remember in the late 60s...
Well, you know, that's funny, because they're still not prepared.
No, but they're better prepared. In the late 60s, there were people sleeping in the hallway because we didn't have beds and all that. They've redone all the hospitals, and while they are much, much, much better, we still don't have enough women psychiatrists, counselors, doctors to speak to the women vets. And I don't care how much you want to say, well, you know, a woman can speak to a man. Well, sometimes a woman just wants to speak to a woman. You know?
Right.
And they got some women issues, and you and I went to a party. The Queen Mary, Long Beach, California, a couple weeks ago. And we talked to a lady, and she was in a Humvee.
Right.
Ran over mine.
Right.
Flipped the Humvee. Her rifle went out the front window.
Right.
And she went outside, got the rifle, and engaged in a firefight. The lady was shot by somebody above. It went down, bounced off her hip bone, and then went out her butt.
Right.
One of the things she lost was she had to have hysterectomy. She wouldn't have any more kids. That's an awful lot to happen for a person. I just don't think that we, the American males, are still comfortable seeing our women coming home from the war disfigured like that. Do you agree on that?
I agree.
Yeah. And I don't think that the hospitals have got enough counselors to talk to the women. And again, one girl said to me, Bill, look at my, I got no legs. Who's going to take me dancing? Yeah, you got a point there. Bill, look at my face.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the shrapnel's done on my face. All you men are so insensitive. All you want to do is go out with Barbie dolls.
Right.
Bill, who's going to go out with me? They said to me, Bill, we women can see a man missing an arm or a leg or great shrapnel wounds, and we can see a man based upon his character. But you men are so insecure, If I don't look like Barbie, you won't go out in public with me.
That's true.
So that's a whole different program we got to deal with, where in the past we've never had that problem, you know? And I can't help but say it. I've said it so many times, and I never get tired. Screwdriver, and I encourage everybody, if you can drive by your local VA hospital, stop in. We say 10 minutes, 15 minutes. That's all we ask.
Yeah.
Stop in. You see somebody in a chair, don't look over their head. Hit them right in the eyes and say, hey, how you doing, man? Where are you from? From Kansas. I'm from Ohio. I'm from Alabama. Wherever you're from. Talk to the guy 5 minutes.
Right.
Hey, what branch of service were you in? You don't need to tell me all day, but there are men, and it's mostly men, but more and more women coming in that go to the VA for the rest of their lives. We can make a small change.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bill, this kind of, you know, the rising number of women veterans and challenges they faced, it already spawned a culture change over there at the VA, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. One of the main reasons in the DAV and the other organizations were so keen to play a vital role in seeing if the VA continues to respond by closing the gaps in services, you know, quality and all that stuff.
Well, I absolutely do not wish to badmouth the VA hospital, because one of my good friends down there, she's had the paralyzed veteran.
I'm not badmouthing.
No. We don't want to paint a negative picture. She has a room for a lot more improvement.
Right.
But you and I both have a good friend down at the PVA in San Diego, Kelly Price Noble. She is working around the clock doing everything she can to help out. We have many of our friends that are doing things. It's getting much better, but we, the public, we need to see, understand what's going on.
Right.
And we got to figure a way. We got to be more alert to these women. If the women would stop by the VA hospital and talk to some of the women, that'd be an awful lot.
Well, you know, Bill,
you and I do our part, because we stop by the main attraction, the topless bar,
mm-hmm.
and intermittently we try and get the girls to stop by the VA hospital and talk to some of the vets. So I figure, if we're doing our part, other people should do their part, you know?
Right. Because, you know, since 2002, there's been 144,000 women, mm-hmm. veterans, have left the service. So they need health care and other services,
yeah.
and they're not prepared for the younger generation.
And I'm...
You know, like now, okay, here's an example for you, Bill. I just said 144,000 women left, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Now, how many full-time program managers do you think they have for those 144,000 women?
You know, but I don't have a clue.
144 full time. Okay, so that's 1,400
yeah.
per person.
Yeah.
You think that person can cover all those people?
No, of course not.
I don't think so.
You know, a long, long time ago, in the life and all that, you know, they used to counsel drugs, alcohol, ex-offenders, dual offenders. And working for the county every day, my list to help people kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the only way I could do it was I had to cut down the amount of time I spent with some of the other people, because I had to get so many people over there. So that amount of people, it can't possibly, we can't get the job done, right? But if we get more women and men that would come down and do some volunteer help,
right,
that'd help an awful lot there. And as we say, too, if anybody's got some contacts at local strip bars, have the girls come down to the hospital, they appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Because they don't ask them, we're coming back.
Yeah. No one cares about you and I. We bring our... Well, they do say, Bill, Phil, when's your friends coming back?
Yeah.
Never get the... Yeah.
Right.
No one ever says, people now and down, hey, Bill, where's Phil? Nah.
No.
Where are your friends? That's all they want to know. Screwdriver and I are making a little light out of it. We're not making fun about the strippers, because we do bring them down every chance we get. But we are trying to tell everybody that you can help. Everybody can help a little bit. 5-10 minutes at the VA hospital saying hello. Go down to the VA outreach programs. Volunteer, maybe doing some paperwork or doing whatever you can do out there. We have a lot of people that need help.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of my friends that got 20% disability. I got no disability. But people like myself with no disability, I try to help as much as I can. And since we're always down together, I know you're out there busting butt too. And you're a vet, by the way.
So, you know, bouncing right back from that one, you know, like you said, Bill, everybody needs to help out on the blog, too.
Yeah.
But this is from the summit in 2011, Nashville Training Summit. That's where that is.
These programs, these meetings, these summits, as you're saying like that, this is, I mean, we're just touching the top of the iceberg and all that. There's so much work's got to be done over here. And the hospitals are not prepared for the women that needs.
Mm-hmm.
They have doctors and they have soldiers, and we've had been for years, and we're still finding out that women have different needs than men. Not that they're above men, not that they're below men. They have different needs, is all I'm trying to say. So don't be jacking me up saying that, yeah, Bill's anti-women. I am not anti-women. Nobody's stupid. However, I'm saying that we need to be aware that women have different needs than men, and we need counselors to help with that program there. Sometimes they pick counselors. Just a guy or a girl stop by and say, hey, how you doing, blah, blah,
right.
blah. And then if you can't, if you feel that's kind of too emotional, and it is emotional draining, I say go to your outreach and volunteer a little if you can.
Right.
Maybe you can just help the counselors get set up.
I just have to type in a message here, Bill, because everybody's calling on either my cell phone or this, and then when I go to answer one, they're calling to hang up and call the other number. So let me post something.
You do that, and I'll talk just a little bit about that. Now, Philip and I are both military. I was young when I went in. You were young when you went in there. We didn't realize or begin to comprehend the fact that we'd be alive today. You and I are in damn good shape. We're healthy as can be. You and I are both healthy as horses. Anybody out there, ladies out there, I didn't say we're hung like horses. We're healthy as horses.
Yeah.
But so many of our friends need help. What I was saying last
week,
we got Bob,
like
we got Tiny,
yeah.
All these people.
That's like that one I sent you a couple weeks ago, and you were probably still looking at your thumb.
Can't talk about that. This is why they're going to throw us off the air one day.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Now, this is like one of the last bastions of freedom. We people need to communicate. We need to tell what's wrong with the country here. We need to tell what's wrong with the VA hospitals. We need to get out there and help. The last thing I really want to do is when I go to bars, and I'm there several times a week, people complaining about stuff. Well, complaining ain't going to do nothing, guys. You got to get out there and help.
Right.
Now, no matter what job you're in, if you're like a mortgage broker, if you're a bus driver, you can get down there and you have some skills that can help these people over here. And you and I have got, again, I'm not going to say any last names, but, you know, Bob and Tiny. We have so many of our friends that really need help.
Right.
And, you know, we got that young guy, Chris, he's leaving the Marine Corps in another week.
Yeah.
Can I say his last name? He is messed up.
Yeah.
Those several tours overseas have messed him up. He, since he's been coming down the bike shop, he tells me his counselor says it's a good idea.
Yeah.
He needs to unwind a little bit with a background he's comfortable with, a motorcycle shop.
You know, I got a funny feeling we're going to read about that kid down the road.
You know what? He's going back east where he's going to lose our net. Screwdriver and I try to help as many vets as we can. And for many vets that are bikers coming into our shop, it makes them feel comfortable. It takes a little bit of the pressure off. But he's going back east where I don't think he's got any type of a safety net. I think he's going to snap.
Right.
I really do. I hope to God I'm wrong, but I don't know. I like the guy, but, you know. So, anyway. We also like all the bikers to be aware and start some motorcycle rallies to help the vets in your neighborhood, your state. And, yeah, I hear some say, well, a lot of things help the vets. The vets need a lot more help than we got. And if you can do some donations, motorcycle rides, whatever you're going to do, believe me.
It ain't even that, Bill.
If they could grab
a couple of magazines, deck of cards, checkers, whatever, go spend an hour or two at the VA.
And if you're uncomfortable for whatever reason, I have a box of cardboard box. I collect magazines. And we have the American Legion riders, you know those boys.
Right.
They come in, pick up the magazines, and take down the VA. And besides, mostly it's all motorcycle stuff. But I got hot rod magazines, fishing stuff. And people drop them off, I get the American Legion riders to come on down. So they're going around and give the magazines out and talk to some of the guys, too. So all you American Legion riders, we appreciate the work you're doing. And that's a nationwide organization. And then with the American Legion riders, we have the Patriot Guards.
Right.
A subsection of the American Legion riders. And if you don't know the Patriot Guards, look them up and find out what they're doing. Those are the people that are standing and blocking off the entrance to cemeteries so the families can bury the son or daughter in peace and quiet without these religious fanatics out there protesting the war. I'm going to tell this to people because a lot of people a bit confused. Before we went to war, I'd be called a protester. I was against the war. We sent the first soldier over there. That's when the protesting has to stop. When it gets time to re-elect the next president, if you don't like this guy, get somebody else in there. But having protests, making our soldiers, men and women, feeling ashamed overseas, it's just wrong. Don't deviate slightly. I was at the post office 2 days ago. Did I tell you that?
No.
You mentioned that? All right. They had a bunch of people outside pinning flyers and stuff off, and they were protesting this. And I'm in a public post office. I got my mama with me. She needs to get something taken care of. They got a picture of Obama, life-size, from the waist up, on a sign. He had a Hitler mustache on him.
Wow.
So I stopped the car. I rolled the window down, my truck. Rolled the window down. My mama's with me. Very nice middle-aged lady said, "Oh, are you interested in what we're doing? Would you like to help us?" I said, "Lady, what you're doing is offensive to me. The fact that you're a woman and my mother's with me is probably one of the few reasons why I'm not getting out of the truck and just ripping that poster to pieces. This is our president. You get behind him. If you don't want him, vote him out." Pretty basic, right?
Right.
I want somebody else in. Vote for that guy. But this is the guy who we've elected. You stand behind this president. This idea of snide remarks like that, Hitler mustaches on him. No, it just irritates the hell out of me. I'm a hard Republican. I did not vote for this guy. But once he was elected president, he was my president.
You mean you're a Republican? I thought you were progressive.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, your bolt friend saying I'm progressive, but no. I'm hard Republican. I vote party lines every time. I don't cross over. I'm not so bleeding liberal. But he's our president. I wanted McCain, but somehow the idea of him and that Snow White woman from Alaska, I don't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't see how that was going to win for us with that.
Well, you know, Bill, not to switch gears, but they got some stuff going on in Australia, and they got some other stuff going on with this racial profiling.
Yeah.
And the ACLU has a campaign because our freedom, their motto is because freedom can't protect itself. So one of the key issues is the racial profiling. So they basically tell you how you can write your thing and your complaint or whatever and
how to do it positive.
It's like I got four things going at once here.
But, didn't something happen too in New Zealand recently? Get a chance to maybe give me some information on that.
Yeah. Let's
stay with this here. We'll get back to that later, if you could, please. Yeah.
You know, it's like they're going to do. They got laws going on in Australia now where they're trying to declare all the bikey clubs.
I'm telling you guys, we don't make bikey up. That's what they call themselves.
Right.
That's no disrespect on our part.
No. But they're trying to enact these laws. They're trying to make them all criminal organizations, impose tougher penalties on members, and it's going to be introduced in a Western Australia Parliament in the coming weeks. That's from the state attorney general.
Yeah.
So what they do is one of these guys got out of jail the other day, so they're bracing for a resurgence of gang warfare in Perth following this guy's release from jail on Tuesday. So it's... Basically, I don't want to give you anything about this guy because it's all bad press. But the thing is, if they can impose this here in Australia, and they're doing it, they're trying to do it in Canada.
Look at Canada.
The only thing that's keeping them from doing it here is we have the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
People don't understand what the Bill of Rights is. They just think we got a constitution.
I understand, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, the world's shrinking. We are truly one clan, one planet. Whatever happens in your areas today is going to affect Screwdriver and I tomorrow. We have asked you people, whoever can hear our voice, no matter what country you're in, what state you're in, to list what some of our concerns are. Listen to what some of our other listeners are talking about. Don't say somebody else will do it. Maybe we don't have anybody else. We need you.
Right.
Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you can do. I mean, you got jobs, you got families you got to take care of. We understand that, but you can do a little bit. I'm one of the ones that am very guilty, and some of the old guys are quick to point it out to me. Years ago, I didn't give a darn. We had great people in this area. We had Red Baron.
Mm-hmm.
We had Biancos. We had Steve Biancos, brother Merlin Bianco. We had Quigley.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of people that were just doing so much work. I just said, I don't care.
Right.
We had John Del Santo. He still busts his balls day in, day out. I never cared until one day I realized that it's not right for them to do everything. I don't have the mentality. I don't have the desire. Some of these great people I mentioned a few minutes are, but I'm doing what I can do. I'm doing something that they can't do. Everybody can do something. That's all we're asking over there. You don't have to be a political. You don't have to be a speaker. You don't have to come on the radio, look around your neighborhood. How can you help your neighborhood? Like Schroeder and I do, we go down to the police station. We go down to the mayor's office. Let them know this is our town.
Right.
It's our mayor. It's our chief of police. These people, we want them to understand that we're not adversarial police or adversarial,
no.
But this is our town. Deal with us. Live with us. Doesn't mean we don't get stopped. We still get stopped all the time, but that's life.
You know, it's just like the same thing with this, going back to the racial profiling.
Yeah.
Where they said that their work encompasses the major initiatives in public education and advocacy, including the creation of essential resources, lobbying for the passage of data collection and anti-profiling legislation, and litigation of airline and highway profiling cases.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're wearing a turban on your head and they don't want you on the plane, you're not getting on the plane. Just some of the ones they did in May. They did one in Utah against the Show Me Your Papers law.
Well, I got to tell you, if I'm getting on a plane, you're getting on a plane with a turban, I want you to take that turban off. You can put it back on. How do I know you got a bomb stuck up in your turban, you know? I don't know this for a fact.
Well,
that's not profiling on me. I don't want to know.
Well,
I'm taking my shoes off.
Yeah.
You can take your damn turban off your head, you know?
No, you can't do that. It's a religious thing.
Well, see, there comes a point, though, when I think...
We had somebody ask somebody that on the way back from London and spent the next day there.
Yeah. He's lead singer of a rock and roll group, by the way, but we won't mention that real loud right now.
No.
Because I think he tried to take the turban off the man's head.
I don't remember the whole story, but...
Yeah, but...
Well, I think what we're going to do, Bill, is I think it's, we're going to take a little break here. We'll go to a little, we say we go with Charlie Baker, right? We'll be right back.
Right. That's kind of good. You know what? Yeah. Let me get War later on there, too.
Okay.
I haven't heard that. No, let's go with Charlie.
All right, Charlie.
Charlie, it's from us to you, brother.
This is Charlie Baker's Ride at bakersongs.com.
Desert air feels good on
Kind of, he always kind of takes the edge out, doesn't he? Just kind of puts you in the mood. Want to sit back. You want to maybe have a little drink. Nice fellas, a little bold, you know, just kind of take the edge off, you know?
You know, we were talking about Australia. You know, I got something today out of New Zealand, and if you remember the story that we did in January about the New Zealand riders supposed to have protest about paying for parking. Well, I got a follow-up today, and he said, I thought he'd be interested. This is from Simon Gottlieb out of New Zealand. But
hey, Simon. I'm glad you sent it out to us.
He's the Bikers' Rights Organization of New Zealand.
It's good to get somebody else doing something, bringing more people together. And what did he and his friends do?
What they did was, it's a follow-up story.
Uh-huh.
New Zealand's Wellington City Council attempts us to force to pay for parking.
Right.
But they had their day in City Hall, after which they released a report asking the council to consider forcing us to pay to park. He said he attached his speech to this, so I'm just reading. We can go to that in a minute. But quote from it what you like, suffice to say we won. The council decided to table the report indefinitely with no conditions, meaning essentially they don't even want to go near it.
You know, it's not how they can do that. I want to mention a couple of years ago, I was at City Hall, and they didn't want me to get up and speak. They said, Bill, can you come back next week? I said, all right. Next month. I came back next month. They said, Bill, we're really booked this time. We'd rather you, you know, can you table it to the following month? I came in the third month. They said, Bill, your request, we're just going to do what you want to do. You don't have to get up and speak. They kept delaying, and now they table it all together. So.
Right.
You don't give up. You don't get frustrated. I certainly get. My first time, I was mad. They said, come back next month. Come back next month. But that's the way it is. You got to fight within the system there, you know.
Right.
But look at this picture here. A bunch of ordinary people there.
Right. And he sent us the video, Bill, so I'd like to play the video.
Okay. Chaps on, rain gear. You know, something tells these people here, we're so spoiled in California.
Well, you know, but it wasn't just one or two guys, though.
No, it was a good crowd there.
Yeah, it was a good crowd.
It looked like some what we call traditional bikers, and that some of them were clean-cut, you know, people. And just people rode motorcycles, got together and said, hey, enough is enough.
Right.
They're showing again how people can come together. Screwdriver and I talked to you about this and talked to you about it. And you keep saying, well, somebody else will do it. Man, there's no somebody else. It's you and I, folks. Screwdriver and I are here, and you're there. You got to help us out here. You got to help yourself out.
Well, the council said they were investigating allowing motorcycles to park in pay and display spaces, and said the move would be incredibly decisive by introducing envy as drivers of four-wheel vehicles saw one motorbike parked in one parking space. So the head of the council said, we'd prefer not to go down that path.
Yeah.
Motorcyclists, many decked out in full leathers, were well behaved during the meeting, but were scolded by committee chairman Andy Foster for applauding at the end of the guy's speech.
Yeah, that's his control factor.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you what irritates me is like when I do the Easy Rider bike show, and I'm paying for a parking space on my motorcycle, and then they say to me they want me to double, triple up in my space that I paid for. No, what the hell should I have to pay for a whole space and have somebody else pay for a whole space and have four motorcycles, each one of us pay for the space, where in reality we're only using one space.
Right, but we've been down that road, and we all had to pay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See that or not see the show, and, you know. We get to the show. I always lose you in the show because I'm over looking at the motorcycles, and you're over there with the dancers, and, you know, we all, I always lose you in these shows here.
Oh, yeah.
These people, they don't seem like real, the first one, they look like they're soaking wet, so.
Yeah. Well, it did look like it was raining there.
Yeah. Again, once again, we have to remind ourselves how lucky we are. Not that we're special or anything, but we really are lucky to be in California. I like to aggravate all my European friends, by the way. I tell them we passed a new law. You have to have two motorcycles.
Yeah.
In case one motorcycle ever breaks down. They don't appreciate my humor at all, but that's okay. As soon as they fly over, especially my Deutsch friends and all that, Bill, can you take us to Palm Springs? Can you take us to Palm Springs? I always take them down. I don't understand why. And they also want me to take them up to Hollywood Boulevard with the freaks.
Mm-hmm.
I got long hair down my back. I've got a big, I don't think I'm a freak. Those people at Hollywood Boulevard, they are freaks, I'm going to tell you right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're a bit more conservative. Screwdriver and I are a bit old school. Pretty traditional, actually. And I'm trying to be more open-minded with other people. I've always told you that I try to follow Benjamin Franklin, our great statesman, who said, your rights stop where the tip of my nose starts.
He also said question authority.
He did do that, too. He did do that, too.
So the other thing is we got a down Marine motorcyclist.
No, that's a tough call.
Yeah. Anybody's interested in getting what I can't post the whole thing, but what I'll do is I'll put a little bit of it and I'll put the links that they can go to.
This has been verified. Yeah. This is legit. I've had a lot of Marines come in and talk to me about this. They've gone to visit the guy. He's a 17-year United States Marine Corps veteran. Several tours overseas. Hit by a mine somewhere, he's banged it pretty bad. Comes home to America.
Gets hit by a drunk.
Hits by at a red light, just sitting there.
Yep.
But I also want to point out to you, so I've said this many times, if it's your day, it's your day. I have many people say, well, are you afraid of getting the motorcycle? What have I got to do with the motorcycle? Whatever's going to happen to me is going to happen to me. The sky's going to fall on me, whatever's going to happen. You can't live your life in fear.
No, and then they can get in contact with Elizabeth Mirren. She's the CEO, and it's the link, and everything is up there. Contact phone number, the Patriot Guard, the American Legion Riders, Administrative Solutions, everything's there.
Among your many hats you wear, you're with the American Legion Riders, aren't you? Or?
Not yet.
Okay.
There's we have a mutual friend over there who's I think he's a snitch myself, but I don't want to get involved in that right now.
Well, let's throw it out in the air and not talk about it. There we go. That's my buddy right here. Make a wild statement there.
Well, I don't want any.
I understand that.
I don't need somebody. I don't need somebody watching what I do and then reporting back to
you.
Powers that be.
I understand.
I got enough trouble on my own.
Exactly.
I don't need him steered to me. Right?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you there. Don't forget, we know that retired DEA agent. He's been in my shop, and he always tells me, you know, 20 years in DEA, you know, I never investigated any of you people down here. And what he should be saying is, hey, I investigate you. I couldn't find you doing anything wrong.
Exactly.
But he always tells me that I never investigated you guys down here. Why the hell wouldn't he? That's his job to investigate people, so... Saying that, I've always kept that guy's distance. I just can't feel comfortable with that.
No.
Everybody say, hey, that's my job. I tried to hang you by the balls. I couldn't find nothing on you, so we're okay. But to make up a story saying, hey, we never checked you out.
No. And same thing with you and I, if you want to go there, the person we talked to Saturday.
No.
It ain't worth it. I don't think.
No. But anyway. The reason Screwdriver and I have a chance to know so many people is because we get pulled over by the cops. You can't help but, you know, recognize people.
Good.
You guys somewhere back east listen to this in the Midwest. I mentioned this a few months back. I got pulled over not ticketed, pulled over for doing 38 in a 35.
Mm-hmm.
Well, black motorcycle, long white hair coming out the back, lit me up. Ooh, can I see your ID? What the hell? You knew my ID when you saw the black mic and the long white hair coming out, for God's sakes. Well, Mr. Kennedy, we're not going to give you a ticket. We're just going to tell you, you've got to slow down and be careful in this area. Again.
Because we're here.
38 in the 35 zone.
Because we, yeah.
And I was in the slow lane.
Yeah, just because you were there.
Yeah. So you people back in other states and all that, you get hassled too. You don't give up. You don't sell your motorcycle. You just say, okay, I'm going to continue on because I'm an American citizen. My taxes pay for the road maintenance, so I have a right to ride my motorcycle 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the morning. Why am I suspect after midnight? That's crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know, they say things like, well, you know, you guys have been drinking. People go to bars and drink at 9:30 in the morning. I have a shop in Oceanside, Kennedy's Custom Cycles. From my shop, 2 blocks either way is a bar. I pull in at 9:15. There's people already in the bar pounding the beers. So the fact that I'm out at midnight, what is that?
Yeah.
And Screwdriver, and I should point out to you that we don't drink. It's just our choice. I've heard many people say, oh, Bill's with AA. Fact is, I just don't drink. We don't make more out of it. I've never been to AA. It's a good organization. I just decided I am responsible for everything. That's why you and I hang out. We have a lot of our friends that just say, we're not going to blame drugs or alcohol for anything. Whatever we do, we're responsible for. Do you agree on that, buddy?
That's it. Yeah. You know, it's like, I got a thing over here yesterday, Bill, and this guy sent me about switching gears to suing Harley.
Okay.
He wants to sue Harley.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah. He says, do you know of any lawsuits against Harley for the ABS brakes that failed and caused wrecks?
I don't.
Disabled the pump by pulling a fuse. It caused me to lay the bike down twice and had several close calls. I have witnesses that saw it happen on several occasions. Almost a year ago, I locked it up on me in the parking lot and the bike landed on my ankle. Now, my ankle's still not right. I have to wear a brace because of it now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, no, first one I heard about, you can post it for you if you want, give them some information. And as I did that, I got another message from Mark Lipsky. He's an owner and inventor about ABS, the TCB brake system. So basically, he sent me back the thing, please do. So obviously he didn't see this message.
Mm.
So I posted it for him, and if anybody's his contact information is there.
No, I am. My brother Mike and I are Kennedy's Custom Cycles. We are independent bike shops. I have not heard yet of any complaints with that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So, yeah.
And every year, Harley's got a recall. So what I would do is I would contact the factory. If you can't trust your local authorized dealer, and ask him, may I have a copy of any of the recalls for 07, 08, and 09, see if there's any problem with the brakes there. And they would definitely tell you what the recall is. That has to be, that's public information. So
exactly.
I start there first.
Exactly.
You got a good dealer. He'll get the information for you, what the recall is. And in fact, being an owner, if you bought the bike brand new, they should be contacting you directly with any recalls.
Or if you bought it used, you should be. You should get.
Yeah,
it.
You can find information
too.
On it. Yeah.
But a lot of people aren't. Why? The right hand's not talking to the left hand, I guess.
ABS brakes. I think they're one of the best there are. So I don't.
They're like anything else. You got to get used to them.
Yeah. Took me forever to get used to the fuel injection in my motorcycle. God almighty. I swore it was no good. I swore it was no good. Until you and I did that party up at Big Bear Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And going up at 9,000 elevation. I think it was 9,000. We were bypassing those carbureted people like they were just standing still. They didn't have the wavelets go up there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one that sold me on fuel injection. I am one of the guys that do not want the change. I'm very slow. I just want things left the same. However, fuel injection is pretty good, and ABS brakes are pretty darn good, too.
Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do, Bill, I was going to touch on this one and see if you want to get it. But,
Actually, I'm about ready to start aggravating something, so give me something. I've been quiet. I haven't aggravated anybody yet.
No,
I want to aggravate somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Huh? Oh, no.
Yeah. No nudity here. We can't have that type of program.
No. But I just wanted to make a comment here because they basically waited till everybody was gone as opposed to going in there when people were there.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, they just did this to bust balls. And if anybody wants to know what I'm talking about, it's one of the clubhouses got raided yesterday morning.
San Diego.
Mm-hmm. I should play the video.
Oh, why not? Okay. You're ready to cause some trouble, too.
No.
I'm ready to argue with somebody. Hopefully it's a beautiful...
As many as 7 Hell's Angels with violent past are wanted by drug agents today.
Hey, the story we first brought you is breaking news this morning at 6. Agents served a search warrant this morning at the Hell's Angels Clubhouse on El Cajon Boulevard. 10 News reporter Luis Cruz is in El Cajon with the evidence agents found.
This is the Hell's Angels Clubhouse that was raided this morning. You can see the front door and a screen door that appear to have been blown off their hinges as officers made their way inside. Loud bangs could be heard around 5 this morning, shortly before SWAT officers made their way into this Hell's Angels Clubhouse in El Cajon. The bangs set off car alarms and woke people up in this neighborhood.
First, I thought it sounded like something had fallen. And my wife said it sounded like an explosion or a loud gunshot. My daughter opened the door and stepped out, and they told her to get back inside. Close the door and stay away from the windows.
The Drug Enforcement Administration teamed up with the District Attorney's Office and San Diego and El Cajon police officers to serve search warrants. Special agents say this is the culmination of a one-year investigation into Hell's Angels members who are charged with violent crimes.
They have violent criminal histories, and we are looking to get these people off the street.
No one was inside the building, and no arrests were made. 10 News cameras were there as officers took away jackets, bats, and computers from the clubhouse. People that live and work nearby say this is the second time in 6 years that this location has been raided, but they describe the Hell's Angels as good neighbors.
We don't see any illegal activity. We never do. No one ever does. Obviously, who knows?
They're actually pretty good neighbors, but, you know, obviously, you know, they have a reputation for something else, so.
Special agents say other raids were going on simultaneously throughout the county. They are looking to arrest 7 to 11 Hell's Angels members or people associated with the group. Reporting from El Cajon, Luis Cruz, 10 News.
Now, Bill, if they had a long-term investigation, over a year...
1 year.
These people say, you think after a year, they still haven't found anything?
Well, now, Philip, you listen to the story. They found some baseball bats. Now, I wonder, is that going to mean like they can't be in the softball tournament now because they took the bats away from them?
Yeah. What happened to the ball and the gloves?
All right, they didn't say about that. And they took the computer away. Oh, there's trouble. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and jackets.
They have, and having a history doesn't mean that you're doing it now.
That's right.
That's part of the word there.
And as we try to tell everybody, not everybody in any organization can be held accountable. Not everybody's guilty. You get 10 guys in a bowling league and a couple of guys are doing something. It doesn't mean everybody's doing wrong. I have no problem with prosecuting the people who've done wrong, but if you keep saying that everybody is wrong, that's crazy.
Exactly. Because when you do something for a year,
yeah.
I mean, they got to find something. If they ain't found nothing, they ain't going to find it.
Maybe in the softball league, maybe they're... I don't know, man. You think those bats are being fixed or something? Maybe they got some...
I don't know. I've seen somebody holding them wrong gloves on, and they were passing them.
Yeah, what do they call
it? They went through four hands before they went in the back of that truck.
Baseball, but what they got there? They put that...
resin.
That tar, right? Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. They're worried about the... whether or not the bats are legal for the softball league, you know? Maybe. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you can join the big boys... You have to deal with it. There's just no getting around it. They have a hard road to go on.
Oh, you said no, you, none of this, okay.
No, no, we can't talk about that stuff. That's pretty much as close to x-ray as we're going to get. And I told you before, sir, I want nothing to do with sex videos.
Okay.
I am not a spectator.
Okay.
I am a participant.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
That's right.
We're going to
take a video of me alone, you know, a sex video. That's
excuse me. We're going to take a quick break here, and I'm going to play your favorite song.
You know, about time we get some war.
This
you
is
know,
Viatica 7.
My good friends up there in Orange County. Activities, screwdriving, our independence. We're simply stating to you, reporting to you the information we get from newspaper and television for your entertainment pleasure. We figure you people can certainly figure on what's going on in the world here. Now, we got, well, everybody's back in Laconia. That's wrapping up real. We have many of our friends back in there. We have a special event up there. They're heading back this way. Everybody's heading for, everybody's left town for Sturgis already. And there's you and I. We're sitting here. We don't roll out of town now until Vegas. But I've been talking to a lot of people. I don't know, it's some underground movement or something. Everybody's trying to go to Sturgis next year. And there's no special reason. But that's kind of interesting. We're hoping anybody wants to find us out in Las Vegas, find Screwdriver and I at Palm Springs, or next year, look for us at Sturgis. We're not sure what campground we're going to be at yet, so you got any special campground, or are you flexible still right now?
Flexible.
All right. Anybody can contact us and tell us their favorites as to what's going on. All I ask for is lots of noise, lots of music, beautiful women half naked. I guess that's about the basic stuff, yeah. The usual stuff, you know.
You know, we got a message from one of our friends today.
Uh-huh.
And they did an article on her in Moxie magazine. And I asked her to call the show, but she's with those people right now.
Oh, okay.
So what she wants to do is if we could give her a shout out, so I'll let you take it from there.
Well, we've got Brenda Fox, and that's one of our favorite friends. She's a Hollywood. Well, first of all, she's beautiful. She's a journalist, a stunt person, and an advocate for a variety of humanitarian causes. She's also such a strong role model for other women. It's amazing in there. Brenda Fox will jump right in the dirt or jump right in the grease and try to fix her own motorcycle. Friend of yours for many years. We get to get a lot of events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping we'll see Brenda at Vegas. I'm pretty much... Was she at Las Vegas last week? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Okay, we know we will see her at the end of September, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see her in Las Vegas. We're looking to anybody to join us. This woman's magazine, I'm not real familiar with it. I'll try to pick it up and see what we got here, but...
We can go right
here. Yeah, okay, thank you very much, then. Brenda Fox.
This is it right here. This is Moxie Magazine, Bill. This is for women with big cojones and bigger dreams.
Where's this? Did it say that?
Right there.
Oh, Moxie, way up top there. Okay.
Moxie Magazine for women with big cojones and bigger dreams.
There you go. Brenda's, she ran for so many years. She got a couple crashes.
Mm-hmm.
She had a couple of sores, but she's certainly proved herself over and over to be a fierce motorcycle advocate. I've liked everything about the girl for many years. She's not bugged me once. So that's just pretty good right there. And I got to point out, too, that years ago, Brenda was going through the stages of, you know, become more and more popular. And now, all these years later, Brenda's still the same Brenda to me. I've never known her attitude problem.
No.
She runs over, always gives you a good hug and a kiss, and always shares us what's going on. We bring her in the VIP area, or she brings us in the VIP, depending where we're at and all that. Did I mention awfully good-looking, too? Did I say that?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to miss that part.
You know, it's like she's very proud of her struggles, Bill. For years, she paid her dues, and she holds that in high regard. Because nothing came easy.
Just a girl.
She's a girl in a woman's in a man's world. But
let's talk about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Hey, we didn't let the women in.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want the women on their own motorcycles. Brenda never, in my mind, to my knowledge, gave in. She plugged away. Her goal has never become the super authority. However, she's always been out there telling the people, hey, this is what I'm doing. If you gather some strength from it, good. And go out and help somebody else over you. So I don't say just a role model for women.
No,
I think for anybody that suffers some, you know, physical ailments.
Right.
Brenda's picked herself up by the bootstraps more than once.
And she's also said when you're authentic and you know your stuff, there is no gender. You just know your stuff. She also admits there were barriers coming up through the industry as a woman.
There was tough barriers for her, especially, you know. And now the young people today listen, well, I don't know what those two guys are talking about. No, you didn't know what we're talking about, because for a long time we good old boys, we kept the club to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want especially when the kickstart motorcycles, We didn't want the women on the motorcycles. I don't know. Insecurity, I guess. Brenda Fox always maintained her class style. She's always been a woman, and yet she was always in the dirt, like I said, or in there fixing her own motorcycles. So, Moxie Mag, good for you. I'm not comfortable with that magazine. However, we're going to look it up there.
Yeah, because, you know, even she's had some issues thrown her way, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
mm-hmm.
Right here.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about the breast cancer, and that's something that she was unfortunately was stricken with, and she's gone out of her way to let other people know you can fight it, you can fight it, you can fight it. I feel kind of bad about it. And you know, she's crazy about animals.
Right.
You've been up her place, she's got
her
horses.
Both her dogs are, they were rescued.
Oh. What about the horse? I know she's got a horse up there.
She had this reporter says right here that she asked her to drive the car while she rode the horse down to the ring.
Hmm. Well, Brenda lives up in the L.A. area up there. We're just screwed up and are down in San Diego.
Where she likes building building friendships still, and relationships, not resumes.
Well, Brenda's never... not been, and Brenda's never been seen without a smile on her face.
No.
Since we've known her, she's always there. She's held a hand out immediately. I've seen her approach everyone, and we have some Hollywood celebrity friends that we know that kind of sit there and profile and wait for people to come to them. Not on Brenda Fox. It's one of the reasons I speak so highly for her. She what?
She gets right down in the trench.
Yeah. All I ask you to be, ladies and gentlemen, is be who you are. Be sincere. Screwdriver and I, we have no, we're not celebrities of any kind, but being in L.A., being in the motorcycle world, being in San Diego, we know so many celebrities, and it's good to have somebody of Brenda Fox's caliber that's out there saying, hey, how you doing, and sincerely meaning it. She asked me how my wife's doing, you know, Bill, how you feeling like that, you know, that's somebody cares about you, you know, it's not the usual stuff. I'm not going to say that celebrities we know that don't give crap about nothing, but... you know, just before Schwarzenegger was elected governor, he and I were down in San Diego, and House of Blues party was going on. And he wanted to stand on the sidewalk. He saw me, and he made a left turn and came up to me. His private bodyguard jumped up between us, like 3 feet apart, said, "You have to move." I said, "No, I don't think so." He said, "Well... Mr. Schwarzenegger has to walk through this way. He can walk anywhere he wants to go." Schwarzenegger, Arnold, again, I don't know if he remembers me that well because we haven't seen each other since he became governor. He said to the bodyguard, "Hey, you know what? Back off. These are good people here." He could have just been a jerk off, but no, stand up guy. And what was it, one of the first laws he changed when he became governor? Do you remember? Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, he went to ape hangers.
That's right. He raised the handlebars 6 inches higher. So I don't think he did too much more to help us after that, but thank God we got that one in anyway.
Hey, Jack, for now on.
Yeah. So when everybody's coming back from Laconia, they're already stopping at, I said, Sturgis, and everybody, all we know, is already... took off from Sturgis. They left pretty much last weekend or Monday morning. Like you and I, the only one left in town.
Right.
But we sincerely hope you will join us also in Sturgis. Find out where we're staying at or join us. We'll have a lot of friends with us. And if not, if you're close to Las Vegas, again, we'll be there for the big Vegas thing.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks after that, Palm Springs.
I think it's time for... Actually, we're going to go do one. We're going to play another one. We're going to give Stormy Montana a play right here.
Stormy Montana, a little girl with a magnificent voice.
And would you like to know? Would you like to say the name of this song?
I would like this. Is Sing This City Home by my friend and yours, Stormy Montana. I don't know her today, you'll know her tomorrow. You by nodding your head.
I'm sorry.
What the hell good to nod your head? They can't hear you. All right. Of course, you know where she gets it. Her mother's beautiful, too, so she gets
right.
Her mother, obviously, with that. Stormy, hope you're having a good night tonight. Actually, Stormy, I'm starving. What's for dinner? Get a chance. Call and tell me what you have for dinner tonight.
She sent a message in earlier that she was going to go eat.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you do not need to send Screwdriver and I money. Just send us food. Food's good.
Food,
yeah.
Okay.
And those unique pictures, which many of you send to us, which we don't share with anyone.
No.
No.
They have, I don't know if you heard about that guy that got beat up in Fullertonville.
Oh, that was sad, yeah. That was sad.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course...
One cop's on suspension only. One out of the whole group.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I got this other thing I was going to share with you.
Sorry, can I repeat this, please?
Sure.
Let's continue with that. They've already approached the kid's father. They offered to settle. Did you hear about that?
No.
Okay, the city council of Fullerton, they said on the news today, they were trying to speak to the father they said, I'm sure I get this straight in my head here, they're trying to get an idea of what a human body, person's life's worth and their expectation and what they do, because the more you do and all that. And they said these exact words to the young man's father. Let's be reasonable. He wasn't a rocket scientist. The father went right through the roof. He ain't going to settle for nothing. He said, you know, how insensitive can you be? Your son was just beaten to death by the police, and now he's trying to settle, and now he's trying to be cheap about it by saying, well, let's face it, because he was mildly retarded, his value wasn't there? That's wrong. That's so wrong. I think the city stepped on their...
Yeah. I think what we'll do, Bill, is we'll go into a couple of people are going to talk about something, and I'm waiting for one to call in. So
okay.
We'll go into a little another Atticus 7 song. This one's called Into the Blackness.
All right.
And we'll be right back. Merlin, is that you, brother?
Yeah, it is.
Are you still in California?
Yeah, I am. I am up
here. We never know about you.
I'm in.
What was the last time we heard you were heading for? Let's see, you were in Arkansas, then you went to Tennessee. The next thing I heard, you were in California.
Well,
did I get the song.
I went to Pennsylvania. Does that count?
Hmm.
I did a 4-day, 2,800-mile trip.
No, you do have that Amish look to you. If you ever just shave the mustache off, you could be that Amish thing, yeah.
I shaved my beard off one time, woke my 14-year-old daughter up and said, what do you think? She looked at it, rolled back over and said, wake me up when it grows back. Bianco child.
Tell me about Pennsylvania. Did you find any of the Amish?
Yeah, I did. And a couple of Amish boys with the boots and the blue work shirts and the black pants and the hat looked and watched me as I rode by with their shades and gave me a thumbs up. And I thought that was about as cool a thing as I'd found in a while.
They are pretty good people, you know?
I'm not sure
their lifestyle is our lifestyle. I don't understand how they can draw the line. They want to be Amish, they want to call us English, that's okay, but to deny themselves the technology, the advantages of life, I don't understand
it.
Screwdriver has asked me to read a quote, and he wants you to kind of elaborate on that, if you don't mind, sir. You okay with me? Okay. Quote, unquote, here we go. The fact that we are here today to debate rising America's debt limit is a sign of leadership failure, is a sign that the U.S. government cannot pay its own bills, is a sign that we are now dependent on outgoing financial assistance from foreign countries to finance our government's reckless fiscal policies. Increasing America's debt weakens us domestically and internationally. Leadership means that the buck stops here. Instead, Washington is shifting the burden of bad choices today on the backs of our children and our grandchildren. America is a debt problem and a failure of leadership. America deserves better. This was Senator Barack Obama, 2006. Do you think that our children are going to even understand what America was like? Do you think they have any idea of the freedoms that we've had? Or do you think that another 20 years, they won't even be able to recognize America. I give the floor to you, brother.
Well, each generation has been saddled with a growing debt for a very, very long time. The fact that Mr. Obama in 06 said what sounds to me to be an extremely intelligent, pointed, and accurate statement about this problem. And then he is the one who's standing there not dealing with it in 2011 because it's his lack of leadership and his inability to put, as I understand it, to put a budget and a package for this the debt limit in front of the Senate and the House, which that, okay, the guy's not stupid. That much we all understood. But that seems to be where the good side stops. Like I say, well, I was sitting there going, okay, who's the smart guy who had this? And then you said Mr. Barack Obama, and that's why I broke up laughing, because that's not the mind that I thought was behind that statement. I was looking for somebody like, where did Thomas Jefferson come from and how far back have we owed that much money out? You bet.
I have a question. I know the answer. I'd like you to tell everybody. This debt that we owe, do you know who we owe it to?
Oh, we owe it to a good portion of it is owed to the Chinese.
Right.
But worse than that, we owe it to our children who are going to inherit the IOU.
Yeah.
And so
our
grandchildren.
I was saying, people don't realize the foreign countries have our debt. You can't just say
yeah.
It's a debt, but our government never wants to say who controls this. It's not us. It's foreign governments. I feel my grandchildren are going to wake up and not even acknowledge America for being the great country it is. They're going to look ahead to see maybe that sleeping giant, which we're told to leave alone, but now that sleeping giant who's got the more human right violations, China, than any country in modern times,
yeah.
That's just getting stronger and stronger, and we're becoming less proud to be America, in my opinion.
And it's the Chinese government has total control over the Chinese people. There's no other way to put it. And what they have managed to do is a dictatorial or a communistic operation that's making a profit. Nobody else has been able to do that. And the reason they can make a profit is we will stand there and holler human rights and violations and squish a little tiny country that has a small human rights problem, and we will do business with a large country who has a major human rights problem. So it's our own not dichotomy, what's the word I'm looking for? Two-faced. Hypocrisy.
That's good enough.
Yeah, that's good enough.
You know, Merlin, I'll never forget that just a while back when China just decided they wanted to take over the whole country of Tibet, the Dalai Lama had to escape to India where they
mm-hmm.
offered him sanctuary. Nobody gave a damn. They took over the whole country. They murdered the priests. They murdered the nuns. And I give Dalai Lama great respect. He told them, his country, his people, do not fight back. Do not kill people. We will work on a peaceful accord. And he's still trying to do it today. He was coming to America, the Dalai Lama, a while ago, and the Chinese government head of something was coming. They had to postpone the Dalai Lama's visit until after the Chinese people left. That's how much damn
yeah.
power they got over us Americans. They're telling us who we can speak to, when we can speak to them.
Yeah, worse than that, they did it without actually saying you can't. They did it with saying, well, it will displease us. And so the kowtow, that's a good old word that doesn't get used much. We said, oh, goodness, let's not piss off the big buck. And that's that right, wrong, and dollar figure. That's the confusion is another major problem.
Do you think, Merlin, I'm going to put you on the line for this, and I'm really going to go way out there. Do you think that the Chinese people will ever turn on the Japanese people for the atrocities that occurred in World War II, the rape of Nanking and a few other places? Do you think some point... Go ahead, sir.
What I think is the legality of it is coming back on the Japanese. But like a lot of things, the Turkish-Armenian genocide in 1915, by the time it's remembered and the argument starts, the survivors aren't survivors anymore. They have passed away into history. And I think that's what Nanking and the huge quantity, I mean, we're talking 7 or 8 million Chinese that just disappeared. Nobody knows why. And then there's the hundreds of thousands in Nanking and the bubonic plague tests. They did live person testing with bubonic plague. The projects that later the U.S. government hired the guys that ran that test. They were war criminals, and we hired them. Excused them from prosecution and hired the – I mean – So, but I'm afraid that, like with a lot of wrongs in history, as the survivors pass on into history, the urge to correct or to get an obligation back from the perpetrators, it disappears with that last survivor.
And he who wins the war writes the history book, right, sir?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you ever figure out after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, which of course was not an American state, we had our fleet there, it was still the, no, I stand corrected, it was a territory, I believe, at that time. I don't know about that. Right after that, they went right over the Philippines, the Japanese, and... I really, to this day, never found out why we had such a large standing army in the Philippines. I have read books on that, And Merlin, did you ever come across any reason why, at that time, the largest freestanding army in America was in the Philippines?
The Philippines, Guam, America, Samoa, these were protectorates. We had acquired control over the Philippines in the Spanish-American War, 1898. So the bond between the Filipino people and America was very strong because we had, in effect, freed them from the Spanish yoke, and the promise of freedom was there up until World War II, where, you know, yes, we're going to free, Philippines will be a free country. So that democracy was part of the promise, and that's why we had the army there. That's why the Filipino people were so pro-American, not just anti-Japanese because these were a cruel invader, but they were pro-American. And I've had the good fortune to know a few of the World War II survivors, Filipino survivors, and they thought of the American... Uncle Sam as an uncle, and the American soldier and people as a brother, because democracy was coming to the Philippines through this. And what they did, like the French in France and the undergrounds in a lot of places, China, tremendous underground in China, anti-Japanese, they were trying to bring themselves and their country to a democracy and a full nation status in the world community, which they've done. And like everybody else, there's been a mistake or two. You know, somewhere we've got a Marcos and Imelda in our history.
Mm-hmm.
But the Filipinos, it is an amazing story, and I think you ought to take your curiosity and go wander through a little bit of it. You'll
Let
like
me hit you. Let me ask you a question about also the same thing, World War II. When America started getting on the attack form, we started island hopping, like Arthur, wanted to liberate the Philippines. The United States Navy and most of the political minds at that time said, let us bypass the Philippines and let's move on to get our airplanes and everything ready to start bombing Japan. Now, do you think MacArthur was grandstanding when he kept insisting that we take over the Philippines? Just a lot of American lives were lost in the Philippines.
Yeah. I don't think MacArthur was grandstanding. What I think, strategically, loss of life, cost to America to finish the war, it might have been less expensive in lives and treasure to go straight up through the middle and after Japan and let the Japanese army in the Philippines just die on the vine. Yeah. But I think MacArthur was right. If we did not go in and rescue our Filipino brothers, if we forced them to deal with a starving, angry, vicious Japanese occupation force, the loss of Filipino life and the American ability to be what we later became, the policemen of the world, I think that would have been severely curtailed. I think the MacArthur was absolutely right. He had, and it was within his authority, he had given the promise, I will return. And he knew that that promise was the American promise to the Filipinos. It wasn't just Doug MacArthur saying, look, I'm coming back, fellas, wait for me. No, he promised for America that we were coming back and we would throw the yoke of the oppressor off. And
right.
That's one of the things that America
I'm Teresa that wants to jump in here. Teresa, you want to jump in and talk to Merlin and I, agree or disagree?
I'm sorry, I dozed off for a moment.
I've had that effect on people, Tracy, sorry.
You're talking, that was a lot of people.
No, I was just on Facebook and a gentleman on there was basically shoveling a lot of shit and I called him on it and he's basically having a tantrum, so I basically.
Tracy,
I hope
remember,
he's holding the fuck off.
Yeah, bullshit doesn't stick to the paper. So have him write it down and mail it to you, because bullshit doesn't stick.
Well, yeah, he's claiming that he knows all these famous people, and I'm crewing up for a paranormal romance, and you know, so it's. Nobody can represent that many people. So I contacted a couple of them, and neither one of them knew who he was. And I basically, after, you know, I said that, and he's going to send me pictures like, well, yeah, I got Photoshop too. I can put myself in the picture with George Washington, and although I'm old, I'm not that old.
I'm here in the Redwoods with my friend Beata Bermanon. Bill, you know her. And,
of course.
Beata is
her daughter, too, don't forget.
Yes, friend.
He has a friend.
You didn't hear him. He has a friend.
I will ignore you on occasion.
You mentioned Beata's daughter. Shame on you.
Oh, Allison? Oh, no. She's married now. We all have to back away.
We always would say nice things about her, too. Very nice person.
The last I heard was that you were talking about passing the debt on. You know what? In my opinion, the debt wouldn't be that bad if everybody paid their fair share.
Yes. The difficulty is what's a fair share. I personally think a corporation that generates a profit needs to pay some taxes.
I think so, too. Oil companies are a multi-billionaire. Raking in billion dollars a year, and not only do they not pay taxes, they're getting subsidized.
So is tobacco. Tobacco is immensely subsidized.
Yeah.
And that's a product that's damn near illegal to use. In many cases, it is illegal.
Yeah.
And yet we subsidize the growth and non-growth of that product.
Right.
I got a problem with that.
I got a problem with that, too. Tobacco is a really good insecticide. It's good for killing everything. So maybe if they should change their target audience from people to farmers who want to get rid of bugs.
Riddix.
Right. But no, what I saw for the budget, raising the debt, the fact that the upper percentage got all these tax breaks, but they didn't extend unemployment. They didn't help the people who really need it. And because of that, Wall Street tanked again because they realized that people will not
right.
have money to spend.
The money that went to the banks and has been held in reserve, the banks are very solvent and protected, but the money
mm-hmm.
did not pass through the banks to the small business loans
right.
or the small housing owner who needed, you know, some help and a refi that would work.
Right.
And those of us who got buried big time. One of the reasons that I ended up looking at the motorcycle, going to hell with it, let's ride, was I had already lost everything but the truck and the motorcycle. And P.T. Barnum said, you cannot cheat an honest man. I needed help, and I was willing to not look closely at stuff. I thought, well, these are the experts. I'll trust them. Well, I have my share of blame. But at the same time, a couple of people that helped me are now in prison, and I'm pleased to have helped that. I had people that absolutely made up documents, sent them to the IRS as if they were signed by my accountant, who I had never heard of.
Yes.
This kind of stuff. So there was an arrogance to it, and that apparently has not been throttled. That arrogance, the banks holding money, means... because we can, is still very much alive and well.
Yeah. If that money, instead of going to the banks, had gone to everybody over the age of whoever's paid taxes in an equal share, this country would be solvent now.
Boy, I hadn't thought about that.
Because people would have been able to pay their bills and pay off their mortgages.
Yeah.
And then... they would be out of debt, and they wouldn't need loans.
Because when I used to produce air shows, and when we would produce an air show, we brought in the federal specs or the federal information that told us and the community were trying to convince to let us put on this messy airplane gathering that every dollar we brought in is worth seven as it moves through the community.
Mm-hmm.
Every dollar that would have gone into your bank account or my daughter's bank account, because that's a tax-paying person, would have gone back out into the community,
mm-hmm.
then that would have moved seven times before it stopped. Roar, which is a company in South San Diego, in San Diego County, a town called Chula Vista, in the 60s, Roar still was paying cash. Their payroll on Friday afternoon was still cash or check. Check if they liked it, and cash if you wanted it.
Yeah.
They had a question raised from the city of Chula Vista as to why should we give Roar a tax break because the business is here. So Roar decided to show how big a business they really were. And on one Friday in 1962, they paid everybody payroll in silver dollars.
Yeah.
This was about 3,500 people. You could hear silver dollars bang across registers and counters for months.
Yep.
Barbershop had a box of silver under the counter because the machines wouldn't hold that much, this kind of stuff. And City of Chula Vista never again questioned the value of an industry.
Yeah.
Because this made, it was a huge demonstration.
Yeah. In Michigan, the tax incentive program before the guy Snyder and his fellow merry band of whatever you want to call them played with it, was bringing in a 6-to-1 profit within 2 years, and it was getting better every year. It was good paying jobs that was, you know, people were being hired from the ground up, and it was saving communities. But it was bringing hundreds of millions of dollars of, you know, new money into the state. Mm-hmm. And they played with it, and they put a cap on it, and hundreds of millions of dollars went to other states. And there are a section of in this country that do not want good-paying jobs. They do not want people to get a good education because an intelligent person is questioning. And if a person's so tired from, you know, fighting to survive, they'll accept whatever scraps that you give them. But a person, if they have a choice between a good paying job and a minimum wage job, they will go for the good paying job. And, you know, companies don't want to pay more than minimum wage.
Merlin, let me ask you a question. With your education, do you think that at this point in time they hold your education against you when you look for work, saying you're overqualified, et cetera, et cetera? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's not that my education is held against me, because I really don't have a strong education. I do not have a college degree. I have some courses, and they're spread out over 25 years. But what I do have is, as the manager of engineering for an aerospace firm at one point, and as aerospace engineering several different directions and things, I really am, you know, it's a joke, but I really am, you know, have done rocket scientist stuff. That's held against me. Oh, you're overqualified. Well, that's another way of saying we're afraid we'd have to pay you too much to keep you. If we don't pay you enough, you will go somewhere else as soon as you can. You're over 52 years old. You threaten my job because you look smarter than I am. It is any number of things. But at least I have the knowledge of knowing that my education is not holding me back because I'm overeducated. If anything, my education is holding me back because I cannot say, there's my degree. One of my stories from my past is I was working as an engineer for a company in Rancho Santa Fe, California, and they wanted to hire me on direct. I was on contract as a consultant. And the manager of the group, he said, I want you. Here's the job. I've got the opening. Everything's authorized. Let's go do this. And we started to do this. Human resources said, well, no, it has to be degreed. It has to be a degreed engineer because he's working for degree. Didn't care what.
Mm-hmm.
My boss walked into his office with me trailing behind him, grabbed a degree of his off of his wall, broke it out of the frame and glass, struck off his name, wrote my name on it, said, here, take this back to them. There's your degree. and I did. Well, they wouldn't accept it. But what they did hire was not what the boss wanted, not the engineer they had who was already doing the job and they wanted to keep him and who wanted to stay there. They hired a young man directly out of college, brought him in for me to train to do the job that I was doing, and within moments of dealing with this young man, I realized that he had none of the basic skills that were necessary.
Yeah.
And so I asked him what his degree was in, thinking, well, you know, maybe it's a portion of engineering that we're not really dealing with. He was, and I got a ton of respect for art historians, but his degree was in art history, not anything engineering, not electronics, not mechanical, not bridge building. And I looked at him and I said, why did they hire you? He says, I'm not sure. And so that's where I know engineer or degrees was the cruising point. It was the cross.
Yeah.
But the kid had a job and I didn't.
Yeah. I've got 2 degrees and I have, in this economy in Northern Michigan, it's been held against me. And I have all this wonderful experience.
And I know you're right. I know you're true. it's true what you're saying. It just amazes me, the concept of what you've just said.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm educated. That makes me dangerous?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me jump in. I want to share something, if you guys don't mind. Remember back in the 70s, I was doing all that counseling?
Yeah.
I had a chance to take over deputy director of this large organization, counseling drugs, alcohol, ex-offenders, blah, 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 blah. And the board called me in, and they said, Bill, we want to give the job to somebody else. I said, that's fine, you know, your call. May I ask, is there something you found lacking in me? Is there something you found in your choice to be superior to my work ethics? No, Bill, we need to put a minority in that position. So what we're going to do for you is, he is going to get the, I hope the guy's still doing good and all that. He's going to get the office, Bill. He's going to get the pay raise. You're getting the exact same pay raise. You do the work. We're going to keep in the office. I said, let me get this straight. He's getting the office, and he's not going to do any work. I'm going to get the same pay raise. I'm out there running all these people. And they said, that's exactly right. And I'm going to tell you right now, I said, fine, I took the job. I took the promotion. But how can you justify that you're giving somebody a job based upon the fact they're minorities? Or upon, in your case, like Merlin, somebody does not have your experience, and yet they want you to step aside or they want you to take something less. This has always amazed me. I thought you want the best person, man or woman, for the job. Remember
right.
talking
That's
about
the way
that?
It should be.
And in your case, they didn't even give him the job. They just gave him the sure looks like. Because it looked good on their balance sheet, not his or yours. And, I've written out the forms on that kind of hiring. You know, what's your ethnic makeup in the company? And one of them, Frank Bryles, owned Bryles Rivets there in Oceanside. I love this old man. Best company I ever worked for. He got one of these because we were a military and government contractor. And he came to me because I had the most experience on this kind of documentation in the company. And he said, here, fill this out. And I looked at it and I said, all right, I'm going to need access to everybody's personnel files. And he said, no. And we talked a little bit. And basically what he said was, I'm not going to open somebody else's private file for a group of people that I have no idea who they are or how they're going to use it. He said, you put down the answers like if it was you and I talking and we were laughing at this form. So when it said, how many people of what minority do you have? I sat there with Frank and we filled it out and we basically said, we have 84 people of a variety of minorities, and stopped right there. We did not identify what minorities or how many, just we got a bunch of different people and they have jobs. And this would come back and forth, and it would come out of one client or one customer would want it filled out again because they didn't like the answers. Frank never wanted to open a personnel file. And finally, that's what we wrote down, was that this company regards the privacy of its employees as sacrosanct. We will not expose a private personnel file to somebody we don't know who or what you are and what you want to do with it. Frank R. Bryles. And I signed his name to probably a dozen of those things. And it was, but he knew exactly what you're saying, Bill, that, okay, we've got a quota. And Frank hated quotas, but you could walk through the plant and tell that the best people were in the best slot for that person. If that job had two people going for it, we sat and went through and talked to people, found out, you know, who's gonna do the job.
Yeah.
That's how I got.
I've got a thing that I've started doing a few years ago. There's always that that box that's marked other.
Yeah.
So I checked that and I put human. I am a human. It doesn't matter what color a person's skin is. I'm a human. That's you know, what my race is. I am human. And
yeah,
it really ticks people off.
Well, I wonder what happens, because for many years, I'm Anglo. I'm white.
Mm-hmm.
I am a Scots, Irish, Italian. And a couple of years back, I started to discover the rumored Indian aspect of my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found my grandfather on the 1907 Dawes Roll, which was a census of Native American people. And there he is. He's listed. Four-year-old child. When he was counted, he was four. And it says Choctaw. He's Choctaw Indian. And now I have also found Creek and Cherokee in the family, and I can prove it. So now when I fill one of these things out, do I sign myself now as an AI, American Native Indian or something? And is there a computer that's going, wait a minute, last season he was white. Now he's an Indian. How does this work? Which means I've become paranoid, but I've been tempted to put other.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and actually that's kind of neat, because if somebody's paying attention, it might be interesting. On the other hand, I really could use the job. And
yeah.
And I'm a little shy about pissing some poor schnook off who, just because he didn't think of it, is going to stop me from getting the job. So, I don't know. But good for you. You know, good on, you know, Tracy, if you're doing it, I like it. I think I'm scared of it, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, I as far as we know, we are Polish, German, French, Irish, and English.
Have you considered the word mongrel?
Well, yeah.
Because I am.
Maybe you should put down United Nations.
We had a friend of mine, brother's at one point, and he was kind of as white bread as they come. But we decided that there was enough various European countries involved that he was a Heinz 57.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that my paternal grandfather was a handsome passing stranger. So we don't know, you know, there is a quarter of my genetics that we don't have a clue about. So, it's, you know, as far as I know, I could be part, flying purple people eater. So it don't really matter. It matters who you are as a person, not the petty stuff.
The difficulty is getting past HR, which is supposed to be, you know, human resources or human relations, but in fact,
yeah,
they really don't deal human very often at all.
Yeah.
You know, if I can, I want to go back to my counseling from the late, you know, 70s, 80s when I was doing all that work. People say to me, well, I'm Mexican, I'm stuck in the barrio, it's holding me back.
Hey, I'm a white guy stuck in Chicano Park.
I'm a black guy, you know, I can't get out of the barrio. And I would sit and tell these people, honest to God, your parents gave you life. You choose to get the education. You choose to leave school early. You get on your own feet, and you don't blame anybody for anything.
Yeah.
It's so easy to say, well, I can't get out of the barrio. Oh, my parents are black. No. Your parents give you life. You do from that point on is you do what you want to do. My father died when I was very, very young. Nothing's ever held me back from doing what I want to do. And I was counseling all those years trying to make people stronger instead of falling back until I can't get out of the barrio or, you know. No. I accept no explanations whatsoever. I would like one day for us to say, this is one planet, we are one clan, why can't we work together? Why can't you get down the street and help your neighbor? Everybody in my block, I know my neighbors. I invite people to go up and down the street and knock on their neighbors' doors. How you doing? Maybe she's an old lady. Do you need any help with groceries or something? I go out occasionally. Or if we would take the time to help each other, we'd realize we don't have so much differences. We have stuff that's similar. You guys want to talk about that a little bit?
I agreed. In my subdivision, we have that. We are friends and neighbors, and we help each other out because we care, and that's what neighbors do. And we just need to extend that type of behavior to the next block and to the next city and to the next country. This is one planet, and it's one planet in the universe. And if we work together, all the problems can be solved. You know, we got to get the egos out of it and the greed out of it, because there is enough for everybody. It's just we just have to start coming from the path of love and compassion instead of greed.
Go ahead, Marilyn, let you finish.
I'm remembering the '60s, and that was the mantra. What you have just put, you know, you have everything from John Lennon and Cesar Chavez. This was the mantra.
Yeah.
You know.
Look at Woodstock. That was how many thousands of people there, and they're granted a lot of them were stoned, but they were crowded in a small spot. They shared what they had. There were very few incidences of issues, you know, of violence. But it was they all helped each other. They all got along, and when it was over, they went away. You know, they went, you know, on their way in peace.
Well,
you know,
in San Francisco, the Haight-Ashbury in the early 60s, it became a little bit of a runaway haven. But was it the kitchen? But anyway, you remember the people that were feeding everybody? They would gather up the leftovers, and just before they were throwing away fruits and vegetables from the stores and restaurants, and it was the people's kitchen.
It was a giant collective.
Yeah, and you could get food there. And that started a lot of what ended, you know, not ended, but became known as the Summer of Love and Haight-Ashbury as a concept. And it was all over. There were outfits like that in Los Angeles and San Diego and Tennessee. And, I mean, it was people trying to help each other. People recognized a need and saw a chance to do something worthwhile. And it wasn't one place or one time. And it's been throughout history. But gradually somebody saw money in it and everything, and it kind of got dissuaded, or, you know, disillusionment happened. But I still see portions of that. I bumped into a store in Hardy, Arkansas, a couple of months ago. man is a veteran of Korea, of Vietnam, rather, and had gone, went through his tour with the Marine Corps, came back, or maybe it was Army, either way, did his tour, came back relatively undamaged, except for, you know, having done it at all. And a couple of years ago, he started to get sick, kidney and liver difficulties. The VA looked at it and said, oh, my God, it's Agent Orange, and you were there at the right time, and you were in the area. And so they cut him a sizable check because he was now disabled, and it tracked back to the 1968-69 Vietnam. So he and his wife looked at that check and said, well, I think we're okay. What can we do good with this?
Mm-hmm.
Set up a store in Hardy, Arkansas, and they pay the rent on the store. In fact, I think they may have bought it. Set up a where if you needed something, you went to them. If you needed food or Levi's or a shirt or shoes or a jacket or a small refrigerator, you'd go to them, and they would either try to find it or, as she explained to me, sometimes we just go buy what somebody needs. And this is all at the same time she's trying to get me to come in and just, do you need jeans or pants or anything? Just go pick some out on the shelf, on the table there. Totally free. I was trying to help because I realized what they were doing, and I thought, I'm just hanging around doing nothing. Can I help you?
Yeah.
And it was amazing because these people had literally taken a windfall and was now turning it to profit their community.
Yeah.
With that intent.
Merlin and Teresa, Merlin, before you go much further, I think it's kind of important. I don't know if Teresa understands. You're talking about you're in different states, you're doing this, you're doing that. I don't know if she understands exactly
what you're all about and why you travel and how you can reach people, how they can reach you. Unless you're completely retired, are you still traveling?
Oh, no, I'm still very much on the LRT. I just got to find work and money because...
Share that with everybody. Patrice has no understanding.
We also have Jackie in New York would like to know.
Okay, we got some emails now. What is this Merlin thing doing? Would you describe what you've been doing, what you are going to continue to do, and how people can reach you?
For about 15 months now, between 15 and 18 months ago, I sold everything that would not fit on the motorcycle. And then I threw a party for some friends, and I said, I'm going to say nice things to you. I bought the beer and the food, so you have to listen. And I threw myself basically a wake or a going-away party and said good things to people that I had loved and mattered to me for years. And I went on what I call the last road trip. If you never finish, you never have to start another one. So far, I have been in 42 states, 44,000 miles, four back tires, this kind of stuff. I have worked in a campground in Wyoming for a month, a little bit in Arkansas, trying to put some things together there before I discovered this wasn't going to work at all. But I have lost a couple of very, very good friends, 40 and 45-year-old friendships. This last December, lost two of my best buddies. I'm sitting here in Piercy, California, up in the Redwoods with the what was the third of, she now gravitated to the top of the list, and we're up in the Redwoods because it seemed like a good idea to go to Oregon and meet some people that she knows for a few days on the motorcycles. I'm looking for America, and I'm finding it, and I really, really like what I'm finding.
If you're in Oregon and a vet, I have a contact person that you might want to meet. D.H. Brown, he's an author, and he is an amazing man. But he lives in Oregon.
Well,
and
right now,
if
I don't know what time we've got. I'm not sure of the other half dozen people on this, but I would like the contact.
Okay.
Because I have also been writing short stories, and I hope to put it together into a book, either audio or an e-book.
Merlin, Jackie, and also Trace Lichten, how can they reach you? Can you tell us a little bit about how can people get in contact with you? How can you share some information back and forth,
ladies from New York?
And Jackie from New York wants to know also, Merlin.
I have an email, and it is Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N, Bianco, B-I-A-N-C-O, the digit 1. So it's MerlinBianco1@Juno.com. I'm also on Facebook under the same alias. That's not an alias. It's really me. And I have my phone in my hand, and it's area 951-442-0421. And then I have also given Phil the okie-dokie, and it's official or more official now, to give my information to anybody. The last people I've tried to hide from, it didn't matter anyway, so I don't do it anymore. I have enjoyed couch surfing and shared old friend-of-a-friend contact stuff. And almost inevitably, it works better than anybody had hoped. Charlie Baker. I met and dealt with Charlie Baker for several days in Nashville through the show here. And then Stormy Montana. And that has blossomed into a couple other things, including Terry Hardy in Chicago. So it's amazing because I like what I'm seeing in America, and I like the people that are out there, and I have found the jerk, so I know there's at least one out there, and I'm willing to leave it alone at just one. And so this is my pleasure.
Okay.
And
do it, Teresa.
If you want to publish, I can tell you how to do it. So it can get in bookstores and off Amazon for like $150. It's easy and cheap these days to self-publish.
Yeah.
It's what's going to cost you the most is the ISBN number. But I can help you do that.
I would appreciate that. Did you get my email?
You talk way too fast for me to write.
Okay. All one word, MERLINBIANCO.
BIANCO.
It's Bianco, the Italian word for white.
Well, and Peace is bringing a good point, and being a friend of yours, you can take it. Perhaps we could have you speak a skosh slow when you talk, because people are trying to hear everything you're saying, because you have a lot to say. So maybe just a skosh slower.
Well,
I know it's hard for Merlin Bianco. But
I went to the New York School of microphone using.
Yes.
I will send you a connection through Facebook.
I would like that. Thank you very much.
And I've got your phone number, so I'll give you a call probably tomorrow. I do my best to help when I can.
Thank you.
Do you guys mind if I do a quick plug for my film?
Of course. Absolutely, dear, please.
Okay. I've got two projects. One's a paranormal romance called Never Say Kid and Say Goodbye. We've got most of our funding. We're looking for product placement sponsors. We're also looking for help with financing. And then we've got Operation Home Base, which is a military series that Phil has read and has passed on. And we're looking I'm looking for our partner to help me produce it.
Hmm.
And if you go to my site at teresachase.com, which is www.teresachaze.com, you can contact me and you can see what I'm doing. Never Can Say Goodbye is going to be the gateway for Operation Home Base and the other projects. And if you love the military, you love the people who serve, and you want to help, I appreciate the help getting, the Gateway project going and the connections for Operation Home Base. It's a family of man drama about forgiveness and second chances. And with all the people, all the guys coming home, they're going to need a little bit more understanding. So... thanks, Phil.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Teresa.
We are closing down. I want to say goodnight to everybody. Teresa, please keep in touch with us so we know what you're doing.
Okay.
Merlin, try not to let a week go by, if you can, to tell us where you are, what's going on. And I hope you're keeping a record of all the people that have contacted you on the show, Merlin. So just part of your travels and all that. That'd be kind of interesting to read. That would be the book I'd want to hear about. Your travels, the people you met on the way, Merlin.
Well, also, Merlin, I want to let you know that there's a lady by the name of Jackie Boone from New York Writer Magazine. She's going to get in touch with you. I told her she might want to do a story on your travels.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Well, Philip and I are your agents, sir. Don't worry about it. We're going to take good care of you. Don't worry about it. Just sign where we tell you where to sign, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, Jack. Good night, everybody.
Guys.
Teresa, keep touch with us, please.
I will do that.
Thanks, screwdriver.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Roland, take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.